Good evening, everybody. It's good to see the number that we have this evening. It's good to see the ones that were unable to be out with us this morning, back with us this evening. We've had visitors regularly, and we had four visitors here this morning. If we could have everybody here all at the same time, we'd have a really good number, but it's a good number that we have this evening. I want to talk this evening about sons of discouragement. And last Sunday, in the morning lesson, I talked about sons of encouragement. I've heard lots of lessons on encouraging. I haven't heard any on discouragement. There may be a reason why I haven't heard any on discouragement, but we need to look at both sides of the issue. We need to encourage people, but we also need to look at the way some people are discouraged and how we can avoid that and how we deal with that situation. And two things in particular I want us to look at is busybodies and meddlers. Now, back to thinking about encouragement and discouragement. We went back and we looked in the first lesson at some passages in Joshua about courage. To be courageous, courage is mental or moral strength, to venture, to persevere, withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. We have to have courage to lead the Christian life. And that's one of the things we looked at this morning. Following in the steps of Jesus is following in the courage that he had. When we look at encouraging, that is to inspire with courage, spirit, or hope. To hearten, to stimulate for good, so we build up each other's spirits. Now, when we discourage, we take courage away from somebody or confidence. We dishearten. We talk about it's like letting the air out of sails or letting the air out of a balloon, and you just feel like you are deflated. So we want to look at sons of discouragement. I'm using that title just to contrast with sons of encouragement and busybodies and meddlers. One of the passages, there are several passages that talk about this concept. One of them is 1 Thessalonians 4:9. But concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. And indeed, you do so toward all the brethren who are in Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more, that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you walk properly toward those who are outside, and that you may lack nothing. Now, this phrase, mind your own business, is used a couple places in the New Testament. And is it wrong to ask about somebody else's business? Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Two passages, though, that come to mind. One is in John chapter 21, when Jesus, after he's resurrected and at the close of John's record of the gospel of Christ, and I'll start reading in chapter 21, verse 17. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter is grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. And when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. Then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper, and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? Jesus, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? What about this man? Jesus said to him, If I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. What was Jesus telling Peter about John? Basically, it's none of your concern. Just mind your own business. You focus on your life and just mind your own business. Well, another instance that comes to mind about people asking questions, I mean, that seems like an innocent question that Peter asked Christ, but in my Bible, you don't even have to turn the page. When you get to Acts 1, and you have Christ with his apostles right before he's getting ready to ascend into heaven. And in verse 4, and being assembled together with them, he commanded them not to depart from Jerusalem, but to wait for the promise of the Father, which he said, you have heard from me. For John truly baptized with water, but you shall be baptized with the Holy Spirit not many days from now. Therefore, when they come together, they asked him, saying, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom of Israel? Sounds like an innocent question. What did Jesus answer? How did he answer? And he said to them, it is not for you to know the times or seasons which the Father has put in his own authority, but you shall receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be witnesses to me in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria to the end of the earth. Here again, he's telling them, you know, you don't need to know everything, and just be concerned about what you need to be concerned about with. But so many times we want to see what's going on in somebody else's life. This slide, this picture is probably 40 or 50 years old, and I imagine several of us recognize who this person is. She's Mrs. Kravitz. What's she known for? For being a busybody. She always wanted to stick her nose in somebody else's business. And that can be discouraging. It can be discouraging. How is busybody discouraged? It means to be working roundabout instead of at one's own business. You're always busy, but you're busy doing something other than your own business. It signifies to take more pains than enough about a thing, to waste one labors, to be meddling with or bustling about other people's matters. Now, if I'm spending my time and energy with other people's business, am I taking care of my own business? To use busybody in a sentence, the neighborhood busybody is telling everyone that the couple up the street is getting divorced. You hear things like that repeated often. It's gossip, it's a busybody putting their nose in somebody else's business. Another sentence, the busybody across the street is always telling me how to tend my own garden. Have you ever had a neighbor like that? We've had several. They'd come over, you know, you ought to mow your grass different than that. You ought to do this. You planted that tree too close to the house. They're just sticking their nose in somebody else's business, and it's discouraging. Well, what does the wise man say about meddling or being a busybody? Proverbs 26:17, he that passeth by and meddleth with strife, belonging not to him, is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. That's just a really graphic picture. Somebody's walking along, there's something going on that doesn't belong to them, and if you can just picture in your mind seeing a dog, a stray dog you don't know, and reaching down and grabbing him by his ears, that's just plain foolish. He's probably going to take a bite out of you if he can. What else does the wise man say? It is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling. Every fool will be meddling. So that's discouraging. It's discouraging. And remember, we want to be sons of encouragement, not sons of discouragement. Well, what does Paul say? Paul says in 1 Timothy 5:13, and besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Again, instead of minding their own business, they go from house to house, idle, not working, tattlers, telling different tales, busybody, speaking things which they ought not to. You've just got no business talking about this, and it's going to be discouraging. Well, how can we take that and make some applications? I want us to consider, to start with, for some examples to illustrate this, 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning at verse 13. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing ye may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free, not using your liberty, but a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. So, with government, I think we understand this when we look at this concept with government. Here's a map of North America. We've got Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Now, the citizens of Canada, whose authority do they submit to? They submit to the laws of Canada. The United States, whose authority do we submit to? We submit to the authority of the United States. And Mexico, whose authority do they submit to? The authority of Mexico. We have no right to tell Canada what form of government they should have. They have a different system than we do. We have no right to tell these other countries what they should charge for taxation, what their laws should be, what their speed limits should be, what their crime should be, what their punishment for crime should be. And if one country starts meddling in another country, what usually happens? A war usually breaks out. Chaos, unrest. A war breaks out because they don't recognize what's the term we use with a government? We don't recognize the boundaries of that government. Where does the United States law end? When we go to the north, it ends when we get to the Canada border. When we go to the south, it ends when we get to the Mexican border. Each area is defined, and we should not meddle or be busybodies in another country's government. Think we understand that? Well, think about the church. The church, each congregation is self-governing. Each congregation is autonomous. One church in this area, one church in the brotherhood is not over another. We are all equal. We have the New Lebanon congregation, the Bath Road congregation, the Inglewood congregation, the Knollwood congregation, the Kettering congregation. There are more than that, but each one stands alone. Each one stands alone just like the government stands alone. We all understand that. Well, what about a busybody church? Can you have a busybody church? There are churches that try to be that way, that stick their nose in another congregation's business. And what happens when that takes place? It discourages the Lord's work. You might say, well, now doesn't that congregation over there, their elders, do they believe that an elder can have one child or they have to have multiple child? What do they believe on that? Do they believe that the elders' children have to all be faithful or just any of them can be faithful? Is that any of our business? If we're sticking our nose into another congregation because our authority ends with this congregation. You don't have a congregation over another one. How many times do they meet on Sunday? Do they meet one time or do they meet multiple times? What would Jesus say to us? It's none of our business. It's none of our business. What if a group wants to cancel services for a time? Not on Sunday, but some other service. They may have a reason, but it's none of our business. How many containers do they use on the table? You know, these things, the list can go on and on and on with a lot of things. And does it promote the Lord's church? Does it encourage the Lord's church? Or is it a tool of Satan to distract, encourage? Can you only take the Lord's Supper? What if one of these congregations only serves the Lord's Supper in the morning? They don't have an evening service, or they don't serve it in the evening. It's none of our business. It's none of our business. Who do they hold for gospel meetings? We might like to go and hear somebody that we'd like to hear, but who they select is none of our business, because each congregation is independent and stands alone, just like the government. Now, we all have fellowship together because we're all baptized into one body. We're all children of God. But we need to recognize the boundaries, and we can't tell another congregation what they should or should do. And I'm talking about things that are lawful. But again, one church, Christ didn't build the church like a pyramid, where you have this level of churches and then these congregations and then a head of church up here. Each one is independent. Well, what about a busybody Christian? Have you ever come across any busybody Christians? We have sons of encouragement. We have sons of discouragement. And again, sometimes things are blatant and in your face, and sometimes they're real subtle. I came across this story. It was on the internet. Maybe some of you have heard this story, but it's a story about a man whose cell phone went off in church. This was a visitor that came to a congregation. A man went into church. He forgot to switch off his phone, and his phone rang during prayer. The pastor scolded him. The worshipers admonished him after prayers for interrupting the silence. His wife kept on lecturing him on his carelessness all the way home. One could see the shame, the embarrassment, and the humiliation on his face. After all of this, he never stepped foot in that church again. Why? Because he was discouraged. Well, that evening, he went to a bar. He was still nervous and trembling. He spilled his drink on the table by accident. The waiter apologized and gave him a napkin to clean himself. The janitor mopped the floor. The female manager offered him a complimentary drink. She also gave him a hug while saying, "Don't worry, who doesn't make mistakes?" And he has not stopped going to that bar since. So that's an example of blatant discouragement. Someone comes and visits, or maybe they're a member and they aren't treated right. And they get discouraged, they stop attending, they go to some place they shouldn't be, but they get more encouragement from that other place, from that wrong place, than they should from the Lord's church. So there can be busybody Christians. And again, the examples that come to mind when I think of this is Peter asking about John. What's going to happen to him, Lord? And Jesus, that's none of your business. And the disciples, are you going to restore the kingdom now? That's really none of your business. You just take care of the things you need to take care of. But what about the family? You know, the family is like the church and it's like the government. The family, each family is self-governing and autonomous. Where does the authority of my family end? It ends at the edge of my family. Do I have authority over your family? No, because we're all independent, self-governing families. Well, what about the busybody family? Have you ever seen a busybody family? They stick their nose in other families' business. And what does that do? It discourages the family, and more importantly, it discourages them from doing the Lord's work. Somebody might talk about doing something with their family, some kind of recreation, and somebody says, well, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be going to this game or that game. They might say, you should be spending your time reading the Bible, or you should be spending your time visiting the sick, or you should be doing this or that. Don't you think that the head of that household has enough responsibility and gumption to know what's best for his family? Some people will tell another family where they can go on vacation or where they shouldn't go. You went there, you shouldn't go there. Some families will tell another family how they can spend their money, how they can't spend their money. It's up to them how they want to spend their family. Who put me in charge of telling you how to spend your money? Who put you in charge of telling me how to spend my money? It gets discouraging. And this is a tool that Satan has to discourage people. And then you're just like that balloon that gets all the air let out of you, and you don't feel like doing anything for the Lord. You feel deflated. And we can understand the boundaries when we look at that map, but for some reason, when it comes to the church or when it comes to the family, we think we've got a right to tell everybody else what to do. Some people will say, you can't eat in a restaurant that has a bar. Well, can I bind that on you? I can suggest it to you, but I have no authority to bind that on you. Some will say a Christian cannot carry or use a gun. Can I bind that on you? We used to worship at a place, and I preached there along with the preacher that was there, and we both loved each other, but he would always, about every Sunday, he would say, and he'd ask me a question at the building, and we'd go out about every Sunday and go to Wendy's to eat, but he'd say, Bruce, now, do you think it's wrong to, and then he'd have some question, and some things we agreed on, some things we disagreed on, but we loved each other and we respected each other and we worked well together because we wanted to do the Lord's work. And he didn't believe that you could carry a gun or a Christian could shoot a gun. And I asked him, I said, so what are you going to do? And his wife was dead. But I said, what would you do if someone came in when your wife was alive and they were going to rob you and shoot your wife? And he said, well, I'd call the police. And I said, well, why can they use a gun, but an individual can't use the gun? And people have their ideas, their opinions, and they're entitled to them, but we can't bind all of our ideas and opinions on other people. Some families will say, you know, they might say, the wife can't work outside the home. Well, if that's what you believe, fine. Practice it. Can we bind that on somebody else? Or are we being a busybody sticking our nose in somebody else's business? Some say that a Christian cannot work on Sunday. And whenever I hear somebody ask a question with the word Christian in there, I think they aren't reasoning from a logical understanding of the Bible, because there's not a law for the Christian and a law for the non-Christian. There's only one law. So if it's wrong for a Christian to do something, it's wrong for anybody else to do it, because it's a violation of God's law. And I heard a preacher say one time, and I didn't get the opportunity to ask him about this later, but he believed that it was wrong to work on Sunday. He believed that it was wrong. He would not let his children take a job that was on Sunday. It's wrong. It's a sin to work on Sunday. Now, that's a commendable belief. But if you believe that, are you going to stop at a gas station and patronize and get gas and go to a restaurant and go to these other places that employ people on Sunday and partake and promote them being in sin? You know, it didn't seem like a logical basis or logical argument. Some things we just gotta recognize. We've got enough to deal with ourselves, and that's what we'll get to here in a minute. We've got enough to deal with in our own life without telling somebody else how to clean up and how to fix their life. God has drawn boundaries for us. He's drawn boundaries. Well, how do we respect authority? And when we get all of these different people telling us what to do, who do we know to listen to? Well, in government, 1 Peter 2:13, again, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as the king supreme or to governors as to those who are sent by him for punishment of evildoers for the praise of God. The authority ends at the border. As citizens of the United States, we follow the law of the United States. Well, how about the church? How do we respect authority? Who do we listen to? Who do we submit to? Well, you think about how Christ designed the church with elders. And in 1 Peter 5:2, Peter says, "Feed the flock of God which is among you." So that limits the scope of the elders, which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind. So where does the authority end with the elders? It ends with that congregation. Elders do not have authority over another congregation, only among their own congregation. And again, I'm talking about things that are lawful. I was teaching a class somewhere about the Lord's money and the pattern for it, the pattern for spending, how a preacher is financed and how benevolence is handled, and went through the examples. And I asked a question in class, and one of the elders asked it, and he gave an answer that was contrary to the Bible pattern. And I talked with him later after the service, and he said, "Well, but since we're the elders, we can decide for this congregation how we're going to do that. Can they do that? Not without the authority of God. They have to follow the authority of God. They can't go around that." With the home or the family, how do we know who to listen to, who to submit to? Well, in Ephesians 5, 22, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord." So, who do I have a right to be over? My wife. Who is she to submit to? She is to submit to me. Paul says, "Unto your own husbands." He repeats that in Ephesians 5:24. "Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything." Again, they submit to their own husbands. Now, if I'll pick on the Lovelies for a minute. If Brother Code tells Jane to do something and I tell Jane to do something that's different, who is she to submit to? Does she submit to me, or does she submit to her own husband? She submits to her own husband. I'm not to be a busybody or meddler. And you know, you see, back to the family, you see people doing things like that, and sometimes their intentions are good, their heart's in the right place, but it's not the way it's supposed to be. And I've seen it a lot of times when a young couple gets married. And what's one of the first things that happens? Everybody tells them how to run their household, what to do. When they have children, everybody's going to tell them what to do. And I think Carol and I were pretty fortunate when we got married. Again, we had enough on our own plate to deal with, but our parents, both of our parents, they kind of stayed out of things. They let us get our home established, our marriage going. We had to deal with things, but you see so many people, they want to be like Mrs. Kravitz and stick their nose in everything and tell everybody what to do. Peter, in 1 Peter 3:1, likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. 1 Peter 3:5, being in subjection unto their own husbands. If I start telling your wife what to do, I'm not respecting God's authority. If you believe about your wife working at home or not working at home, that's none of my business. I got to respect your authority. You go back to the family, just thinking about the home and the family. You know, a couple generations ago, a lot of people thought it was wrong to play cards. A lot of people thought it was wrong to go to the movies. A lot of people thought it was wrong if a woman wore a skirt that was so many inches above the ankle. Above the ankle. That was immodest. There have always been things like this. There always will be things like this. What do we do? We mind our own business. Ephesians 6:1, with the home, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Again, who has the rule over the children? The father of that house. Not somebody else's house. There are boundaries that we need to respect. So meddling in other people's lives is how some people avoid dealing with their own life. It takes work for us to fix our life and live like Christ would want us to. And it's just easier to point out what we think is wrong with everybody else. And all the time we're doing that, what's that doing? It's discouraging people, and it's discouraging the Lord's work. Matthew 7:3, and why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So when we're looking at things in other people's lives, we need to look in the mirror and look at ourselves first, and then we can help encourage one another. What does the Bible say about being a busybody? Well, in 1 Peter 4:13, but rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. So if you're a busybody, being a busybody, and it again, that's one of the things, a tool of Satan, being a busybody is equal with murder, stealing, and doing evil. So when we think we want to be sons of encouragement, I hope and pray we are never the opposite, that we are discouraging. And again, that can take place in different ways. it can be very in your face, blatant, like, why didn't you turn your cell phone off? What are you doing? It can be something like that, or it can be these real subtle things where it's like people throwing darts at you and they just deflate you and they discourage us. What's the solution to this? Well, 1 Corinthians 13:4 is a good place to start to love each other. Love suffers long and is kind, does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Again, that brotherly love, like we were talking about in Hebrews, let brotherly love continue. Galatians 5:22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. And those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. So we should be bearing the fruit of the Spirit. Colossians 4:6. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man. So we need to strive to be the sons of encouragement. We do that with our speech. We do that with our actions. And friends, when we looked at the first lesson and we were saying with encouragement, we're either encouraging or discouraging, because there's really no neutral. There's no neutral. We're doing one or the other. And I tell you, I have more in my own life than I can handle. So I hope I don't stick my nose into your business. And this saying here, when I stand before Christ in judgment, he's not going to ask me about your sins. He's going to ask me about my sins. Each of us have to be busy making sure we get our own life right. And while we are doing that, we encourage each other. We encourage each other to get their life right with Christ. We encourage each other to live faithfully. We encourage each other to go out and to bring others in. Satan is always trying to distract and discourage us. We must be sober and we must be vigilant. He does it in so many different ways. And just like as we're getting into Nehemiah on Wednesday evenings, when that work was opposed, when we get through that, we're going to see there are about four, five, six different ways that work was, Satan was trying to discourage that work. We've got to understand our boundaries. We don't stick our nose in other people's business. I don't stick my nose in another congregation's business. That's what they're doing is their business. God's not going to ask me on judgment, well, what do you think about congregation XYZ? He's not going to ask me, what do you think about brother ABC? He's going to ask me about myself and how did I live according to his law. Friends, as I said, I wanted to present the other side of encouragement. This isn't designed to be an encouraging lesson, but to make us aware that Satan is going to try to do everything he can to stop us from doing God's will. We've talked about it before. If you're outside the body of Christ, he's going to do everything he can to keep you outside of the body. He's going to tell you, put it off, do it tomorrow. He's going to do everything he can to keep you outside of the body. If you've become a Christian, what's he going to do? He's going to try to get you to go back into the world. Don't you know this was so much funner when you were living in the world than in the church? And he's going to tug at your heart, and he's going to try to get you to go back into the world. If he can't get you to go back into the world, what's he going to do? He's going to try to make you an ineffective Christian and someone that is not promoting the work of the church. Friends, is there anybody here that Satan is keeping out of the church. You need to have the courage. You need to have the courage to stand up and say, I'm not going to serve you anymore. I'm going to bury that old man, be buried with Christ in baptism, and rise to walk a new life. Then we all encourage each other, because life's going to be full of disappointments and setbacks. We all encourage each other. And then that day when we make it to heaven, our job is, as Christ will say, well done, thou good and faithful servant, because we've done what he wants us to do. If you need to be obedient to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.